KLUP.com. News Talk 930 KLUP, San Antonio, The Loop.
9:30 KLUP time is 8 o'clock.
With SRN News, I'm Bob Agnew in Washington. In his weekly radio and internet address today, President Obama said he hopes Congress passes the tax cut extensions before the end of the year.
The opportunity for families to send their kids to college hinges on this debate. The ability of parents to put food on the table while looking for a job depends on this debate. And our recovery will be strengthened or weakened based on the choice that now rests with Congress.
In this week's Republican address, Congresswoman-elect Kristi Noem said she's glad that Democrats and Republicans appear to be working together to extend the tax cuts.
It's certainly encouraging to see that President Obama has proposed a potential agreement to stop all the tax hikes scheduled to take effect on January 1st.
And Republicans say it's the best way to stimulate the economy by giving small businesses more confidence to grow their business and hopefully hire some workers as part of the project. Also at SRNnews.com, a federal jury in Utah has convicted a former street preacher in the 2002 abduction and sexual assault of then-14-year-old Elizabeth Smart. Smart, now an attractive, healthy, confident woman, stood up in public yesterday at the trial and said her case can be an example to other victims who want justice.
Not only is this an example that justice can be served in America, but that it is possible to move on after something terrible has happened.
And speaking to reporters after the guilty verdict was read, one juror explained that they just didn't buy the suspect's claim of being mentally ill. Investigators say a 12-year-old Virginia girl who had been missing for a week was found unharmed after somebody recognized her in a San Francisco store. Roanoke County Police Chief Ray Lavender.
Brittany and Mr. Easley apparently were in a retail store where they were recognized by someone who had seen the wanted posters.
12-year-old Brittany Mae Smith was found with Jeffrey Scott Easley. Police will not say at this point whether he is a suspect in her mother's death. This is SRN News.
Hello. Last year, about this time, Jim and Mary Johnson made a resolution to never be broke again. They made some serious decisions to take their future into their own hands. Today, they are enjoying some of the financial blessings that they had been praying for. Hi, I'm Andy Willoughby. Happy holidays from the Three-Step Plan. Jim and Mary started a home business with a three-step plan. They've worked hard, and their business has truly been blessed. They work mostly on the telephone and the internet. They have developed many new relationships with some really great people. They not only improved their bottom line, but now they're helping others, and they really enjoy that. For information, go to 3stepplan.com or call 888-366-5258. You too can have a better next year. With the 3-Step Plan, you'll get the training and support you need to make your business successful. To find out how you can make more money working from home, go to 3stepplan.com or call 888-366-5258.
You wake up just dreaming about it. Coffee hot and fresh. Eggs done just right. Pancakes so light they almost float off the plate. And for over 8 years now, that's just the kind of breakfast we've been making at the Magnolia Pancake House. But hey, don't think it's just about breakfast. We serve lunch Monday through Saturday, featuring 7 exceptional salads, black Angus burgers, soup, quiche, and the best Reuben sandwich anywhere. At the Magnolia, quality counts. We use the freshest, most wholesome ingredients, combined with attentive service and comfortable surroundings, to create a true dining experience.
Pass me a pancake, Mandrake.
Now that, my friends, is real value. Magnolia is open every day from 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. We are at the corner of West Avenue and Embassy Oaks. That's the West Avenue entrance to the Embassy Theater Complex. For more information, give us a call at 496-0828, 496-0828, and I'll be looking for you to come by the house, the Magnolia Pancake House.
Everybody eats when they come to my house.
This is News Talk 930 KLUP, The Loop.
Military City USA Radio is sponsored by CPS Energy in Port San Antonio and is produced by LMI, Heart of Texas Realty, the San Antonio Business Journal, and the Greater San Antonio Chamber of Commerce. Now it's time for San Antonio's Military City USA Radio Show. And here are your hosts, Mark Fry, Senior Fellow LMI, and John Thurman, San Antonio's most listened to realtor.
And good morning and welcome to Military City USA Radio, where we salute all things military here in San Antonio, Texas, thanks to our partner CPS Energy, the proud providers of military energy's needs today and tomorrow, and Port San Antonio, putting San Antonio on the global map of economic development. I'm John Thurman of Heart of Texas Realty, and my co-host is Mark Fry, Senior Fellow of LMI. Good morning, Mark.
And good morning, John. You know, this morning, our guest is Major General Simeon Trombitas, who is the commanding general of U.S. Army South, located right here at Fort Sam Houston in San Antonio, Texas. We'll be talking about the U.S. Army South mission and its headquarters organization here in San Antonio. Next week and the following week, and I want everybody to pay attention to this, we're going to have another two-part series. This time, we'll be featuring military chaplains. We'll talk about the important and inspiring mission they conduct and the roles they play in military life. And you know that's going to be the 18th and the 25th Christmas Day, so I want you to listen to both parts. We will have the command chaplains from Headquarters Air Education and Training Command, Colonel Bob Page, Chaplain Colonel Bob Page, and from U.S. Army North, Chaplain Colonel William Lajai, who recently returned from service in Afghanistan. If you want to alert your friends and neighbors about our program, have them tune to News Talk 930 KLUP.
Now, they can also listen to all the podcasts of previous shows at News Talk 930 KLUP.
Absolutely. If you go to KLUP.com, there's a big icon on the front page that says KLUP Podcast. Click on that. Go to the Military City USA icon, and it'll say featuring Mark Fry and John Thurman, Saturdays at 8. Click on that, and all of our previous shows are there.
Okay, this segment of the Military City USA program is brought to you by CPS Energy. CPS Energy provides the power our military needs today and tomorrow. To get more information about CPS Energy, visit them at their website at cpsenergy.com. And we at Military City USA thank them for their support of this program. And you are listening to Military City USA Radio, and we'll be talking to General Simeon Trombitas, the commanding general of U.S. Army South. We'll be talking about U.S. Army South mission and its headquarters organization here in beautiful San Antonio, Texas, at Fort Sam Houston. I should say historical Fort Sam Houston.
That's right. And so good morning, General Trombitas. How are you this morning?
I'm fine, Mark. How are you?
That's great. We are doing great. And listeners who've been listening to the program, yes, I am still on crutches, recovering. Get to see the surgeon next week. And so we'll have a medical update.
Yeah, for those that didn't know it, Mark Fry missed the cat, but he didn't miss the stairs.
But, yeah, that's right.
I have to ask the general a question here coming in. You've been on our program before, and we've talked to you down from Haiti, I believe it was.
Yes.
But what is it like to walk around Fort Sam Houston where Eisenhower and MacArthur and people like that have previously trod?
It's a very interesting place to be. It's a beautiful old post with a rich history. And as you mentioned, folks like Eisenhower, Billy Mitchell, and many of our previous military leaders were there. I think anyone that visits Fort Sam Houston gets that sense of history by those buildings that are there, and it's a real pleasure to be stationed there.
And you know, John, for our listeners, coming up, we will have a public service announcement that talks about the quadrangle at Fort Sam Houston, that it's open to the public. So get out your pen and pad and take notes when that comes on. But General Trombitas, you're the commanding general of the United States Army South, and actually a native of Warren, Ohio. And so it's great to have a fellow Ohioan on the program, but
please don't push that too hard now. I mean,
yeah, but I also learned he is an Ohio State Buckeyes fan.
Oh, that's so, what I mean. That's
there
what
you
I mean.
Go, John. And so, and he's not ashamed to say that either. And Big Ten co-champions again. So, but tell us about.
See what I mean,
you know, tell us about. Okay, you're from Warren, Ohio. Whereabouts in Ohio is that? And where did you go to school? And how did you come to join the United States Army?
Warren, Ohio is in the northeast corner of the state. It's about 16 miles from the Pennsylvania border, up in the cold country right now. I was granted the opportunity to go to the United States Military Academy and was commissioned from there. And as a matter of fact, my first assignment was here in the state of Texas at Fort Hood, where I had the opportunity to spend
up in Killeen. Yeah.
Up in Killeen. Spent five fine years there, and that got me off to a very good start.
So when you were in high school in Warren, Ohio, had you already decided that you were going to join the Army and go to the military academy, or was it a matter of them finding you?
No, I had decided on a military career early on. I'd had a number of family members in the military. As with many folks of our age and generation, my parents, my father, and my uncle served in World War II. And we were aware of that. I had a number of cousins serving in Vietnam, some of whom were career military officers and soldiers. So I thought I'd follow in their footsteps and serve our nation.
And so at the United States Military Academy at West Point, what was your favorite subject or what did you major in?
Yeah, at the time, we didn't have a major, and we got a general bachelor of science degree. And I was pretty terrible in anything.
Well, science and engineering, wasn't it?
Science and engineering. And I was pretty terrible with anything that had to do with numbers, so I like to focus on history and the softer subjects. I did have the opportunity while there to take the Spanish language for 2 years, and I think that helped later on in my career, as you'll find out.
So yeah. you didn't come from a family that spoke Spanish as a regular background?
No, actually, my heritage is Romanian, and
really?
I was raised speaking that language, which is a Romance language and akin to Spanish.
So it wasn't too hard to pick that up. But you have some fairly substantial educational credentials that have gone on since then.
I've been afforded the opportunity to attend a lot of good Army schools, and I think that the United States military as a whole has a very good educational process. After each step in one's career, we're afforded the opportunity to go to school to educate us on the next phase of our service. And one of the best, I think, schools I've attended is United States Army War College. Not only did it give us a master's degree, but it allowed us to interact with other strategic leaders and form some relationships that were very valuable later in our career, as well as some partner nations. You know, in each class, we have a substantial number of foreign students that attend, and it allowed us to form bonds with them as well.
So, in fact, where is that United States Army War College located?
That's located in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, on another very old historical post that was founded in the 1700s, and, you know, George Washington slept there.
And it's kind of interesting because I know from recently a friend of mine who was in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, it's actually now Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania, because that was the claim to fame that, you know, he was the most famous athlete, notwithstanding the fact that he's from Oklahoma, and that's where he ended up retiring. But
well, General, before we go on to the talking about your duty assignments, I'd like to ask you, we have a tremendous number, in fact, it's growing, tremendous number of young people who are listening to our program wondering, okay, well, what would a military career be like? And what kind of opportunities to afford myself? And I think one of the things that Mark and I have found is that an awful lot of people are not really paying attention to their driving and things like that, and that will affect them in the future. So talk a little bit about getting ready for a military career.
Yeah, in preparing for a military career, of course, you should take all the educational opportunities you can. You should ensure that you live a good, clean life. Actually, because those soldiers we get nowadays, and sailors, airmen, and Marines, are all volunteers. And I think for the first time in our nation's life that we have a choice as to who serves as opposed to universal conscription.
We've all heard the line of the judge gave somebody an opportunity to go to jail or to go to the Army, and that's not really the choice anymore.
There's no choice like that whatsoever. Today it's those upstanding citizens that are, in fact, upstanding citizens are afforded the opportunity to come into the military and in turn, to get the benefits that the military holds. As you mentioned, education, and that's a great benefit for anyone joining the military nowadays.
It's continuous, is what I'm hearing you say.
Yes, it is continuous. If you decide to make it a career and if you decide to come in for a term, you're afforded the GI Bill that allows you to go to about any school that you desire to further your education, and that coupled with travel and the other opportunities you gain is an experience.
I like the way you say saying that coupled with travel.
Well, you know, and John, we're talking to Major General Simeon Trombetas, Commanding General of U.S. Army South, located here in Fort Sam Houston. And, General, I have to ask you the same question that we've asked a lot of general officers, which is, when you were at the United States Military Academy at West Point, how long did you think you would be in the Army? Did you imagine you would be a career and end up being a two-star general, or what did you think at the time?
I thought I would stay as long as I could. I never thought I would be a general officer. I would have been happy to be a lieutenant colonel. At that time, that was about the pinnacle of one's career, to command a battalion and be a lieutenant colonel, and that's what I set my sights on.
So after you left the military academy, you said your first duty assignment was here in Texas at Fort Hood, and I'm assuming you'd not been in Texas before that.
I just passing through and visiting on vacations, but to live, no.
And so after Fort Hood, what were some of your more notable assignments on your way back here to San Antonio?
After Fort Hood and being an infantryman there, I was had the great opportunity to join our United States Army Special Forces. And as such, they sent me to see a lot of great things throughout the world. We've had, as a family, had the opportunity to live in the countries of Colombia, Panama, and Korea, which is interesting for my family and allows them to learn about other cultures. Separately, I had also the opportunity to serve in Iraq and El Salvador. Without my family present. Those were all pretty notable assignments. Within the United States, we've been to some very beautiful places. Of course, Fort Sam Houston being one of them. You know, another Fort Carson, Colorado at the foot of the Rockies. And we've just been afforded some great opportunities.
Now, I take it you're probably living in one of those historical rock homes there on the base, on the post.
I am. We live in the Travis House, number 11, and it was built in 1871. Very beautiful.
That's a historical thing. And do you know some of the other people that have been there over the years?
I have a list. None of them are overly famous, but all of them.
Well, so you're the one who's going to make
careers.
That change. Okay.
So, John and General Trombetas, in your travels, you said that you were afforded the opportunity to actually live in South America. But at that time, what was your assignment? What organization were you part of?
When we lived in Panama, I was a part of the United States Southern Command, which we're a component of right now. I had the opportunity to be the aide to the Commander-in-Chief of Southern Command at the time, stationed in Panama, and then later on went to be a member of the Special Operations Command there. As such, we got to travel throughout Latin America, and it was a great experience.
So talking a little bit about special operations, one of the general officers that we've had on the program, Brigadier General Carvalho, is a special forces guy, and the comment we made at the time is he can kill the bad guys with one hand while he's doing surgery, since he's a nuclear cardiologist. And so being a special forces person involves that much extra training, and it's a very rigorous program, correct?
It is, and it constitutes being culturally aware of those other partner nations we work with. As you might know, that each special forces group has an area of responsibility, and they try to learn at least one of the languages spoken in that area, also learn about the culture and the geography, so they can apply those skills in working with foreign nations.
Well, you know, after we get through the break, we're not quite there yet. We're going to talk about the U.S. Army South and the very important mission it has. But you've now been in San Antonio for how long as the commanding general of U.S. Army South?
I've been here a year and 1 month.
And so tell us your impressions of San Antonio today from the standpoint of how it is to serve in this community.
Well, this is a very supportive community, and it's a pleasure to live here, quite frankly. The people are
that very... wasn't a leading question mark, I don't think I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's a very...
I felt reasonably confident we would get a positive answer.
You guys are pretty good at this.
Well, San Antonio is very proud of the military, if you haven't heard. I don't think there's another community on the face of the earth that has about a two-week celebration of America's military. And Mark Fry, I have to compliment him as having been a major influence of putting that together, because we have about 2 weeks right prior to Veterans Day that the San Antonio almost has a festival. In fact, it's being looked at as a possibility of developing it into a worldwide festival.
And that is Celebrate America's Military, which is organized by the Greater San Antonio Chamber of Commerce every year. It's we just completed the 40th year, and 2011 will be year 41. And so we know that you participated in some of the Celebrate America's Military events. And
dutifully, I might add, I'm sure.
Well, the folks that are stationed here certainly appreciate the support and all of the things you do for us. And that's what makes this such a fine city for the military to live in.
Well, of course, every year, I guess a lot of communities do the Washington trip, but it's a SA to DC trip, but San Antonio was probably the one that that created the format as to how it should be done. And a group of our leaders go up every first of every year and put our agenda on the table of Congress, if you will. Don't mess with our military, guys.
It will be February 6th, 7th, and 8th this year.
And if people want to go on that trip, they can actually, they've got to be a member of the chamber.
They do not.
They do not.
Absolutely not. In fact, let me just give a quick plug. If you're interested, if you live in San Antonio, you're interested in going on what is called the SA to DC trip, just go to www.sachamber.org, and right there on the homepage, there's a link called Get Involved, and it will take you right to the SA to DC registration page.
Well,
all right, John.
I think that's probably an excellent opportunity here for our, we call the last one Parade Rest, so we'll call this one a break here. And you are listening to Military City USA, and it's time for the San Antonio Business Journal LMI break here. Stay tuned for Major General Simeon Trebitas, the commanding general of the U.S. Army South and the Army South Mission in San Antonio, John Thurman of Heart of Texas Realty, and my co-host is Mark Fry of LMI, and we'll be right back.
How do you get to the heart of the San Antonio business community? With the San Antonio Business Journal. Whether you're looking to learn about, network with, or reach the decision makers that drive San Antonio, the San Antonio Business Journal is your essential business tool. The San Antonio Business Journal has the inside scoop on all that's happening in the San Antonio marketplace. Join the network today of over 57,000 readers who use the Business Journal for local news, in-depth industry coverage, insights, and information. Call 341-3202. To start your 5-week free trial subscription. And when you advertise with the Business Journal, you gain instant presence and added credibility with the business community. 65% of the Business Journal subscribers hold top management positions. Get the attention of these important people and get results. Keep your finger on the pulse of the San Antonio business community and make the San Antonio Business Journal your medium for success today. Call 341-3202. That's 341-3202.
LMI, providing practical solutions for complex problems. Federal agencies value LMI's not-for-profit status and specialized support in logistics, information, asset, and resource management, as well as organizational improvement. For nearly 50 years, LMI has been solving problems in the areas of defense, intelligence, homeland security, healthcare, energy, and the environment. LMI employees come from diverse backgrounds, government and defense, business and industry, academia and research. More than half are either veterans or former civil servants, and a majority have advanced degrees. They work for LMI because they believe in the LMI mission, improving the management of government. LMI, here to serve you, San Antonio. Learn more about LMI at www.lmi.org.
And you are listening to Military City USA Radio. But before we move on with our interview, I want to talk to my co-host, John Thurman, Heart of Texas Realty. So, John, is it a good time to buy real estate here in San Antonio?
It's absolutely an incredible time. The national news continues to beat down the whole market of real estate, and that's a big opportunity because San Antonio continues to create jobs thanks to General Trebitas and people in the United States military who continue to bring people here. And the housing values are phenomenal, but interest rates continue to be enormously low, and it just doesn't get any better than right now is the time to buy real estate. If you give me a call at 481-6767 or look us up on the net at heartoftexasrealty.com, we'll get you in that house, and we just absolutely love the United States military. And you are tuned to Military City USA Radio, where we talk about all things military in Military City USA, San Antonio, Texas. I'm John Thurman of Heart of Texas Realty, and again, I guess you know that, but Mark Fry of LMI. Thanks, Mark. Let's continue the program.
Absolutely. And, John, this portion of our show is brought to you by Port San Antonio, transforming Kelly Air Force Base into the world-class development it is today and will be in the future. We at Military City USA Radio thank them for supporting our program.
Port San Antonio is a proud sponsor of Military City USA. For over a decade, Port San Antonio has been transforming the former Kelly Air Force Base to the benefit of San Antonio, creating quality jobs and generating economic growth. Over 70 employers are now based at the port, providing good jobs to 14,000 San Antonians in fields that include aerospace, logistics, defense, and education. In addition to offering great places to work, Port San Antonio is a great place to do business. As the region's largest property leasing firm, the port accommodates a wide variety of spaces, from offices to industrial facilities. Port San Antonio's success is based on providing facilities to its customers that serve their wide variety of needs, hangars to small offices, warehouses to workforce housing. Spaces now available include a nationally historic 32,000-square-foot building, ideal for a headquarters or school, a newly constructed air cargo building, and over 300,000 feet of warehouse and distribution space. The port also offers sites ranging from 5 to 100 acres for build-to-suit options. The port already houses many of the region's industry leaders, including aerospace customers Boeing and Lockheed Martin, headquarters for over a dozen Air Force agencies, and a growing number of logistics customers. The $4.2 billion in economic activity in the port serves also as a catalyst for new businesses. As the port's large customers grow, including the Air Force and aerospace industries, new opportunities are being created for subcontractors and vendors. To find out more about Port San Antonio, including spaces and sites available and opportunities for investors and developers, visit portsanantonio.us or call 210-362-7800.
You are tuned to Military City USA Radio on News Talk 930 KLUP, where we celebrate all things military here in Military City USA, San Antonio, Texas. I'm Mark Fry, Senior Fellow with LMI, and I'm joined by John Thurman, Heart of Texas Realty. We're talking about the mission of U.S. Army South, and our guest is its Commanding General, Major General Simeon Trumbidas. And for listeners not in San Antonio, you can hear the show by going to KLUP.com and clicking on the Listen Live link, which is in the upper left right below the KLUP logo. You can also listen to us starting on Monday, if you want to hear the replay of the show, by going to KLUP.com, clicking on the KLUP podcast link, and finding Military City USA Radio. And, John, before we begin, I have to do the usual thing we do at this time of the program, give a shout-out to all the new listeners. Those listening from U.S. Army South for the first time, we welcome you. It's always good to listen to what your boss has to say. I'll just give you a little bit of professional guidance there. And we also have listeners. I just got an email again today from somebody in Florida saying he had listened to the show. We have listeners in Canada. We have listeners actually in the Pentagon.
We have a number of listeners in the Pentagon. They are really watching this show because they're wondering whether or not there's a possibility this can be done in other communities. In fact, I can tell you it's being looked at in El Paso.
Absolutely. And so, but of course, John and I probably won't be the co-host of that show. In any event, back to Major General Trumbidas, U.S. Army South. A number of questions, but let's talk about the big picture. Describe the mission of United States Army South. And, you know, a lot of our listeners probably wonder, okay, what is that, U.S. Army South? Tell us about your mission, sir.
Well, our mission, primarily, we're the Army component of United States Southern Command. And as such, we conduct operations and theater security cooperation in South America, Central America, and the Caribbean Basin. Our missions can be diverse as humanitarian assistance and disaster relief to helping train our partner nations to build their capacity and capabilities in facing together those threats to not only our national security, but those of our neighbors as well.
Well,
so when you talk about the partner nations of U.S. Army South, from a word picture standpoint, if somebody's looking at a map.
If someone's looking at a map, we're responsible for the United States Army activities in, as I said, South America, Central America, and the Caribbean, which comprises about 31 different countries. You know, it's about one-sixth of the world's land mass, and we have some very important partners there, such as the country of Brazil, which is about the fifth largest country in the world right now.
Well, I have had the opportunity to get to know General Valenzuela, and it's very interesting of his perspective. I've seen a couple of his PowerPoint presentations that he did back when he was the commanding general. People really don't realize how important the Latin American countries are relative to the security of the United States. That's the mission of the United States Army. You're not down there for the purpose of just being nice guys. You're down there to look out for the security of this country, right?
We are. We're to look out for our security and build the capacity of those partners so they can assist us in doing that same mission. For example, for probably the past 30 years, the country of Colombia has participated in peacekeeping operations in the Sinai, which frees up our soldiers to do other things and assists us in keeping peace in another part of the world. The country of El Salvador, the Dominican Republic, Honduras, and initially Nicaragua supplied soldiers for the first rotation of our combat operations in Iraq. And then El Salvador stayed for 11 more rotations. So building those capabilities give us allies and countries that want to work with us. We have the opportunity to practice interoperability with those countries so we work better. And as we saw here recently, conducting humanitarian operations in Haiti with the
UN. You were very heavily involved personally in that.
We were. We spent 3 months in Haiti, and I took about 280 members of the command that rotated through to assist in relief operations there. In conducting those operations, we worked with many of the countries who we partner with on a daily basis. For example, the head of the UN military mission there is a Brazilian, and his deputy is Chilean. The Uruguayans, the Argentines, all had contingencies there, as did the Guatemalans. So we get to practice our interoperability with those countries in a very good environment to where we all have the opportunity to help another nation in need.
So the cultures then of all of those nations come into the picture as you're dealing with issues of decisions and what have you. You have to look at how those people will look at those decisions, right?
We certainly do, and we have to weigh that when we conduct operations. And fortunately, many members of my command are very culturally aware. Have conducted other operations in Latin America, speak Spanish, and have dealt with some of the officers before.
Well, when we are deployed in places like Afghanistan and Iraq and what have you, is the presence of a multinational force like that, does it create awareness on the part of whoever our combatants or our enemies are that we are not there alone?
It does. I think it shows a very united effort in trying to gain and maintain liberty for our neighbors around the world. I, as a matter of fact, in Iraq, had the opportunity to work with and visit the Salvadoran contingent, and they were very professional soldiers and assisted us greatly in southern Iraq.
So on on sort of the average month, year, week, how does United States Army South interact with those partner nations? Do they spend a lot of time visiting us here in San Antonio? And
we have a number of activities. As a matter of fact, we have three liaison officers, one from Brazil, one from Colombia, and one from Chile, that live here with us in San Antonio. And in that manner, they get the opportunity to share in our culture and learn more about this fine city. We have recently had the commander of the Peruvian Army visit us here in San Antonio, and as part of the program, besides giving him our military perspective on how business is done, we take them downtown and take them to the Alamo, tour the Riverwalk, and allow them to partake in some of the United States culture, and that's always a big hit with our foreign business.
Do we have many of those show up in San Antonio just accidentally during April and during Fiesta?
Actually, they're pretty well planned, and as you know, in Fiesta, most of the American officers are heavily engaged in that, as are all of the bases here. So we try to preserve that time for us, the U.S. military, to interact with the folks here in San Antonio.
And so, talking about, again, United States Army South, describe the people of United States Army South in terms of what kind of career fields. Recognize as a headquarters organization, you're going to have lawyers. We know you've got public affairs officers. We know that, you have some of those typical types of people. But what makes U.S. Army South unique from a career field standpoint?
Well, from a career field standpoint, first I'd like to point out that our force is like the rest of the military right now, some of the very most professional persons I've seen in 33 years of service. Most of our soldiers are combat veterans and have learned through recent operations to be very culturally aware and the importance of this awareness in dealing with our partners. We're very lucky in that the United States Army has a program where we train foreign area officers and make them experts in certain regions of the world. So a number of the soldiers that are assigned to headquarters, United States Army South, have had the opportunity to work in Latin America before, are culturally aware of activities in Latin America, speak either Spanish, Portuguese, or some of the other dialects down there, and are afforded the opportunity to travel back and forth and work with those partner nations. We mentioned earlier in a variety of different scenarios, anywhere from actual humanitarian missions to exercises to professional exchanges.
Well, General, one of the things that continues to come back, and Mark and I like to reinforce this again because I mentioned very early, people do listen to this thinking about should they pursue a career. If someone is thinking about a career in marketing and they're thinking about international business, I can't think of a better place to get that experience because, I mean, you know, you're taking them around the world and teaching them the cultures of what have you. And that's a saleable commodity. That's something they can use when they retire.
It most certainly is. To learn the other cultures, to see what that part of the world is like, give you a basis of experience that I don't know if it can be replicated in other jobs.
I don't think it can be replicated in college. It might be in some kind of internship or what
have you. It's that practical experience that employers seek so often, and why the military, retired military, both officers
and enlisted.
And enlisted are in such high demand, especially here in San Antonio. And General Trombetas, talking again about U.S. Army South, a lot of our listeners in San Antonio are not aware of how U.S. Army South came to be in San Antonio. And the other part of the question is it just a fortunate happenstance, coincidence, or good planning that both U.S. Army South and U.S. Army North are located at Fort Sam Houston?
I'm sure it had to do with good planning. Quite frankly, we began our life as a military unit in the Panama Canal Zone in the early 1900s. When the canal was dug, there was a need to defend it, so Army South was created, and in about 1914 started operations in Panama. When we gave up the Panama Canal zone in the area, that headquarters moved to Puerto Rico for a very short time. And then with area available here at Fort Sam Houston and our proximity to our theater, it was the ideal place to relocate the headquarters.
And so you actually occupy the old Brooke Army Medical Center as your headquarters building. And for a lot of people who may have been at the old Brooke Army Medical Center when it was the Brooke Army Medical Center, it's really not quite the same facility anymore, is it?
It's not. It's been modified to allow for our headquarters. But as you spoke earlier about the sense of history and those things that make Fort Sam Houston special, for example, my command sergeant major's son was born in the Brooke Army Hospital that we now occupy as a headquarters. So there's always that that small tie and those little things that make our assignments.
So there's a
special
sense of sacredness there, for sure, because the people that are serving there now, they have had some experience of history.
And, John, a little side note. Listeners may remember we had Mr. John Manguso, who is the
curator of the museum.
He's the director of the museum at Fort Sam Houston. The Fort Sam Houston Museum is, in fact, free and open to the public. I think they're open every day of the week except Monday and Tuesday, and there are details on the website. But if you go to that Fort Sam Houston Museum, they run about a 20-minute movie, I think it is. Maybe it's a little bit shorter, but it's a movie that was originally going to be a recruiting film that was being filmed at the time World War II broke out, and so it's changed into highlighting the Brooke Army Medical Center as the world-class medical facility that it was at the time. So a little bit of linkage and trivia there.
Well, what you're talking about a little bit is that one opportunity follows the next. So when Army South was created to defend the Panama Canal, but then they saw other needs for it, and then of course it needed to move as the transition took place. But that transition is continuing right with Brooke Army Medical Center as you're speaking right now, because suddenly they realized they needed an all services medicine brigade or what have you, and so that is now developing in San Antonio as the military begins to work more closely together. I guess warfare is kind of coming together in that Mark, you're headed in the direction
and I guess the linkage here is U.S. Army South is part of United States Southern Command, and so you spend a fair amount of time interacting with your counterparts in the Air Force and the Navy. Is that not correct?
We certainly do, and as John stated, there's efficiency in joint operations, and especially at the military training centers nowadays, if we can train all of like capabilities in one place, we save time and money. We have the great opportunity.
Well, and the people communicate better with each other when they're on the ground.
They certainly do. And again, like we do with our partners in Latin America, we also form relationships with our brethren in the other services that really enhance our ability to do work across the board. The Air Force component for Southern Command is in Arizona, and we interact with them quite frequently. The Naval component is in Florida, and we have the opportunity to meet and work together quite frequently.
Yeah, in fact, last January or February, it was early last year, I had the pleasure of being part of a group that was at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base as part of an Air Force group, the National Security Forum alumni. And we got to tour the operations center there while you were in Haiti, but while military operations were going in Haiti. And one of the things I remember is that a remotely piloted vehicle had pretty much 24/7 continuous surveillance of Haiti. And that was very interesting. So that operations center is a critical component of Southern Command's mission.
It most definitely is.
Well, Mark, you've talked us right on into the USO Chamber of Commerce break here on Military City USA radio program. We're talking to General Trombetas. He is the Southern Command of the United States Army South. And when we get back on Military City USA, we'll continue this dialogue. Thank you, sir, and we'll be right back.
The Greater San Antonio Chamber of Commerce is proud to sponsor KLUP's new Military City USA radio program. For more than 100 years, the Chamber has led the community's efforts to show our broad support for the men and women who sacrifice every day to make our freedom possible. The Chamber does this through our ongoing work of the Military Affairs Committee, our visits to the Pentagon and our legislators in Washington, D.C., and in our work locally and regionally to ensure that the economic impact that comes from having nearly a quarter of a million military in San Antonio are able to thrive and grow. The Chamber does all of this because we know the truth behind the phrase, we know that freedom isn't free. If your business needs business connections to all the best resources in San Antonio, including joining us as we show support for our military, contact the Chamber at 229-2100. That's 229-2100 or at sachamber.org.
40 kilometers northwest of Kandahar, Afghanistan, at a remote desert military base, American soldiers are playing video games. There are cold drinks, snacks, comfy chairs, and an internet connection. It's the USO To Go program, and it's just one of the ways the USO supports our troops, lifts their spirits, and serves as a link with the American people. Find out how you can help. Visit us at USO.org. The USO, until everyone comes home.
The Alamo chapter of the Professional Loadmasters Association is looking for all loadmasters living in the San Antonio, Austin, Houston, and South Texas areas that would like to join the association and our chapter. The association is open to all current and former aircraft loadmasters who have flown and performed aircrew duties on transport aircraft. For more information on the association, go to loadmasters.com, click on chapters, then click on Alamo. The Alamo chapter holds its monthly meetings on the first Saturday of every month at 11 a.m. If you have questions about the Professional Loadmaster Association or the Alamo chapter, please contact Andy Vaquera at 679-8674.
Welcome back here to Military City USA Radio, where we celebrate all things military here in San Antonio, Texas. I'm John Thurman of Heart of Texas Realty. And is this part of the program? I'm lost in my script here.
So. Oh, well, John, I'm your co-host. I'm Mark Fry, senior fellow with LMI. And again, this segment of the program is brought to you by Heart of Texas Realty and LMI.
And LMI.
And we are talking to Major General Simeon Trombetas, who is the commanding general of U.S. Army South, located at Fort Sam Houston, right here in San Antonio,
Texas. Somebody wants
Texas.
To listen to a previous program.
And if somebody wants to listen to a previous program, and if somebody is just tuning in right now and wants to call their friends and neighbors and say, hey, listen to General Trombetas, just go to 930 News Talk, KLUP, 930 on
KLUP.com.
If you can't hear locally, go to KLUP.com and click on the Listen Live button. Whatever is playing on the radio at this time will be streaming live. But if you happen to miss that, you can catch all of our shows, generally the Monday following, by going to KLUP.com, click on the KLUP podcast, find Military City USA and all of our previous shows, including the two.
Where he was previously on here.
General Trombetas live from Haiti.
He spoke to us from Haiti.
Which was, I remember we had one.
That was an experience.
We had one good adventure, and then the second time I kept saying, General, and you know, we had a little bit of a comm problem, which we're not having this morning because we have you right here. But if you would be so kind as to tell our listeners sort of what was the situation in Haiti when you landed on the ground, and what did you, when you left Haiti, kind of what was the condition? And by the way, I'm just reminded for our listeners who want to learn more about your mission, go to your website at www.arsouth.army.mil, and you also have a Facebook page. But back to Haiti. When you were there, when you first arrived, what was the situation like? And just describe that to our listeners.
Our forces started moving into Haiti on the 2nd of March, and we took over the mission on the 15th of March. Haiti was a devastated country. As you're well aware, the earthquake that struck that country devastated about 90% of the buildings and killed about 230,000 people within the span of a minute and a half. So you can imagine that the devastation left over from that was...
That's almost unimaginable.
It was. But due to the quick action of the United States military and many non-governmental organizations, and of course the lead agency, United States Agency for International Development, we were able to take quick action to help those people that survived. And that was part of our main mission, was to alleviate human suffering and save lives the best we could. What we were worried about at the phase when we arrived there were the heavy rains, flooding, and mudslides. We in the command working with the other forces on the ground, were able to relocate and save about 37,000 people, moving them to temporary shelter and safer areas through construction work, ensuring that the mudslides didn't happen, build canals and channels to move the water and the danger of flooding away from them, ensure that security was provided for food distribution, and that those agencies that enhanced the capability of our government to help the people were free to work in that environment.
General, one thing that comes to mind in that kind of an environment is that whenever you find yourself in that situation, the command, i.e. yourself, really is not capable of, or don't have the resources to make every command. The people who arrive on the scene have to be ready. Am I correct with that? There's no possibility they're going to be retrained or what have you. When they get there, they've got to be ready to make decisions and do their jobs.
They have to be extremely ready, and I'll have to, in this form, really applaud the flexibility of the United States military service member, not only the Army, but all of the service members that took place in operations in Haiti. As you're well aware, our military now is training for major combat operations in Afghanistan and Iraq. As such, when we shifted our mindset to a rescue mission, and our soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, and Coast Guardmen were able to readily adapt and help people as opposed to conduct combat operations, and did it with a compassion that I think was unmatched.
And so while you were there, I'm sure there have to be several incidents that stand out in your mind where either one of our soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marine Corpsmen, Coast Guardsmen did something way above and beyond the call of duty. Talk about some of those experiences.
We had a large number of our service members that worked with local orphanages. One specific instance comes to mind where a orphanage that gained its subsistence by running a bakery was in need of repair. So our service members fixed the roof on the facility, helped them fix the ovens, and as such, also with help from their families, got clothes and shoes for the kids, and really formed a tight bond with these children and made a difference in their lives. And I think throughout the island of Haiti, when our service members worked with the people, there was special compassion between our service members and the children there. And when the children of Haiti remember the United States and see the flag that we wear on our soldiers, on our shoulders, I'm sure that they see the face of that service member that helped them out during that time of need.
Well, Haiti is, as we all know, an economically challenged country before the earthquake, and after the earthquake, I'm sure the problems were just compounded.
Agriculture and tourism are probably their two mainstays of economic, and tourism went away.
It certainly did, and as you're aware, they faced some additional challenges with the cholera outbreak, but the United Nations mission there is quite capable in working hard to alleviate the situation. We are remaining engaged on that island as well. After we left principal recovery operations, we maintained an element from the Louisiana National Guard and four other National Guard elements that remained in Haiti until the 15th of September to assist in the reconstruction effort. Now, we left during the hurricane season, and we will return there in March to continue that mission of reconstruction and medical aid for the people on that island.
And so as another question, we have lots of pet owners, including yours truly, who are here listening to the show. I can imagine when 230,000 people perish, there have to be lots of abandoned animals as well. And did that create another set of challenges for our U.S. military there?
I believe that control was gained pretty early there, and those people that did survive maintain their family unit to include those animals that were pets. As we moved folks from one camp or areas in danger to some of the relocation camps, they did come with their not only dogs and cats, but their hogs and their chickens and those animals that
and even snakes,
them.
I'm sure.
And you name it, and they came with them because that was the whole family unit. And when we took steps to ensure that we culturally were aware of those things that would sustain the people or help them on the road to recovery, we made sure that we brought all of their belongings to include their
General,
animals.
I understand the Navy had a major part in that, where they brought ships that were capable of hospital ships and supply ships and could actually, you know, bring potable water and those kinds of things. And I think that's part of what's happening now with whenever y'all go to any type of situation, you really kind of go together today.
Yes, and that's the beauty of our joint operations. Of course, being in the Army, we need the Air Force to get us there. As you mentioned, those Navy ships help sustain us, and they also provide, in some circumstances, especially in natural disasters, a good platform offshore where we don't become a burden in an area that has that disaster, but are able to work independently and launch from an aircraft carrier or a naval ship, for example, and it behooves us to learn how those other services operate so we could work better together to alleviate any humanitarian relief situation as well as combat operations.
Well, you know, what you've just described is a rather awesome series of people working together. The Air Force and what have you provide you transportation, but the Navy... you know, I pictured it from a point of view that the Navy just simply provided water and things like that, but they provided your housing.
In some circumstances, initially, they provided the housing for the Marines that were working offshore. And as we said, it was a grand joint effort. You know, the Air Force Special Operations folks opened the airfield. The Air Force brought in supplies for those soldiers and Marines that were on the ground physically doing the work to alleviate the situation. The naval aircraft and helicopters launched off of ships to provide us situational awareness. And as you mentioned, Mark, we even had folks out in Arizona that were monitoring the situation through the unmanned aerial vehicles.
Absolutely. And so how large was the force at the time you commanded?
At the time I took command, we were about 10,000 folks on the ground, and that came down from a high of about 22,000 at the end of January.
And so I have to ask this question as one of the final questions. Growing up as a young man in Warren, Ohio, did you ever imagine that one day you would be commanding 10,000 people providing relief efforts in Haiti?
I never thought I would do anything of that nature in my life. It was pretty simple back then, and I thought if I could be a soldier, a platoon leader that controlled 40 people, I would be doing pretty good.
I think he's asking you to put on a recruiting hat.
Well, and again, it just goes to show that, as all of our shows demonstrate, and sort of the purpose for the show is to educate our listeners about just the variety of opportunities available to men and women in the United States military. Well, General, as we're wrapping up the show this morning, what are some of your final thoughts? Any other thoughts about U.S. Army South you'd like our listeners to know?
There are, and I'd like to just expand on your point about the military. We have some great civilians that work for us as well. And those civilians that work for the Department of Defense also help to incredibly expand our mission. They provide us continuity. When the soldiers move, those civilians stay, so they give us that knowledge that remains with the headquarters. And we are a team, soldiers and civilians working together. I couldn't tell you how proud I am of our military nowadays. I think they're the best trained, most intelligent force we have ever fielded. And I'm certainly proud to be a member of that force, and I'm very proud to live in this fine city because they're extremely supportive of everything we do.
General, anyone that you'd like to say hello to?
Well, I'd like to pass on my holiday greetings to all the members of my command. I'd like to say hello to my mom and dad and the rest of the family in Ohio, my brother in Florida, and also to all the service members that listen to this show, no matter where they might be. And I ask all the folks that listen just to think of our service members in harm's way as we celebrate this holiday season, and just say a little prayer of thanks for those liberties that the people that wear uniforms have granted for this nation.
Well, let's see. I understand that we have a Facebook page for y'all, and it's www.arsouth.
Well, that's their website. But they have a Facebook page,
okay,
too.
And, I'll bet if you Army. Just... Mail, but if you... Army South, if you just Google it, you're going to find it. One of the things I'd like to say in parting here, General, is that it really amazes me that all of y'all, and I know you deal with enormously difficult things, but you've gone through this program continuously smiling, which tells me that you enjoy your work. And I really enjoy our part of associating with the United States military, because I know y'all do a tremendous job for the United States. You keep us free, but you also carry on humanitarian missions around the world. You do it in coordination with all the other services, and I think that United States military is something the United States can be very, very proud of, and I thank you very much for your service and the service of all of your forces. So, Mark, what do we have?